Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Tonight, we are scheduled to have our second interview
with the Constitution Party's presidential candidate, Virgil Goode. So we are looking forward to that. It's not scheduled to come in until later on this evening. So we are looking forward to that. And we're also waiting on for one of our panelists, Chris, to come on in. We almost, unfortunately, did not have the show tonight because I had some internet problems here at the home front in the studio. I had a complete loss of phone, internet, and TV. That's what happens when you have bundled packages. Maybe that's something that should be reconsidered. But fortune favors the bold, and here we are back on the air. Hopefully there's no other problems. I'm going to play a clip here of some music because I have someone important calling in that I must check in with. So enjoy this while I answer that call. Thank you. Okay, thank you, folks. The brief, I know we didn't hear very much of the music, but there was not the call I was looking for. However, we do have, I believe, Chris on the line. Is that you, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Oh, there you go. Yes, I'm waiting for a call by a certain someone, hopefully if they're able, but we shall see. So go ahead. I know you've got some things prepared for tonight. As I said, we do at 10 o'clock this evening. We're scheduled to have Mr. Goode coming back in, which looking forward to it. So we wait on him. As I said, I believe he is scheduled to come in at 10 p.m. tonight.
Cool. Yeah, no, I somehow missed that. And so I was mentally, I'm totally prepped to start asking questions. So I'm going to have to totally jog my brain here to fill this hour. And I'm sure we can, but I'm all in question. I'm in question mode right now.
I'm sure we can. And once he gets in, but I know he was traveling from Ohio to Virginia yesterday, and I believe he had some stops along the way. And then with a conversation I had with him the other day, he might have a different number that he'll have to call in. For unfortunately, I didn't get the opportunity to hook up with them today to have a conversation, but we'll see how that develops. So, as I said, he could be still on his way from the debate from the other night, which was Tuesday night debate, and I believe it is Thursday. So soon, we may hear an update on the two candidates for the October 30th. I must have missed that while my internet was down. So yeah. If you've got that information, please share.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Who do you think it is?
Oh, let's see. My guess is Gary Johnson. My guess is Gary Johnson, and just by the makeup of it, also I would say Rocky Anderson. That's my guess.
No, you got half of it right.
Well, Gary Johnson is sure definitely one of the ones, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Stein. Mrs. Jewel Stein.
Stein and
Johnson.
Gary Johnson? I'm shocked. I am shocked. I mean, I was hoping Mr. Goode, and actually, you know, I was thinking deep down that that's a very good possibility. However, considering the makeup of the audience, I wasn't as sure if that was a possibility. That is, I'm stunned. I'm actually stunned. I really am.
Yeah, so am I. If Virgil Goode would have said, you know, free drugs, free education, you know, jobs for all.
Ain't that something? That's a very good way to start tonight. We've got something to talk about now, Chris.
Yeah, I've got a couple thoughts rolling in my head. I'm recovering.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable.
I was racing to get all my questions put together because I wanted to ask him, you know, not the same old questions, you know what I mean?
Ooh.
But also take some of the questions, you know, that are key questions, but just spin them a little, I don't want to say spin, but you know what I'm saying? Spin them a little differently. So that's what I was working on. I was trying to be very creative.
Well, let me interject real quick. Rex just had a granted in. Of course, that is the Rex from the Texan Rex Show, which you can find.
Call in and quit playing on chat.
Well, you could call in if you wish, but of course, that is the Rex from the Texan Rex Show, which you can hear on various nights, I believe. Less than heard was Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, but I could be wrong. So, if Rex would like to call in to correct me on those nights, it would be much appreciated. So if you'd like to come in. But, yeah, he just had a great idea. Yes. And, yes, there is a Facebook page. Yes, I'll have to check that out more in depth. I was only glancing at it for a while because, as I said, the Internet was down for quite some time tonight. His idea was to have Goode and Anderson on Bard's Logic and ask them the same questions that are going to be on that debate. I think I really like that idea.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. I totally agree.
It's definitely a check out.
I mean, I've never talked to Rocky. I don't know any of his people.
No, I haven't either.
I didn't know who he was until 2 weeks ago. You know.
Right. Well, and I tell you what, I really think the two that have been picked, I hate to say this, but is indicative of where we are at in this nation. I really do. When I'm talking about socially and where people want, you know, free this, free that, which it's not free, you know, that's the mindset. And the people need to realize that that kind of mindset, how do they expect this nation to survive with that kind of mindset? But it's unfortunate, and I think that's indicative of those two folks, that that is still the mindset of a lot of people out there.
Well, yeah, but Gary Johnson's not a socialist. He's the guy that wants to cut 43 cents on the dollar in the federal government. He's the guy that says that free has got to go. So I don't know. I think you got two ends of the scale there.
Well, I agree in the sense that fiscally you have, you know, on the left is represented by Jill Stein, and socially on the left, you have represented through Gary Johnson. So you still you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. You still have these leftist ideals, one socially and one fiscally, you know, and those are the two who are going to be, you know, debating, you know. So I guess I guess it's not going to be very much talk about any kind of social issues because they really wouldn't have much to debate about, I would guess.
I'm typing.
So that's my take on that. I guess they would not have, you know, anything. Well, of course, I don't know if they're supposed to be covering
but I think
policy,
I had to respond to somebody, but I think the difference between Jill Stein and Gary is he assumes that you're going to have to go out and buy your own pot, and she probably wants the federal government to finance it.
Yeah, that's funny. You can call it some kind of health care or something like that.
Yeah, some green smoke initiative.
I'd like to see, you know, conservatives take over the Green Party, you know, because I do consider myself, environmentalist, but that's just unbelievable.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, the problem is terminology, Robert. It's always terminology. Words count. Everything to do with green and environmental, okay, is tied to liberals and socialists and communists and Agenda 21. And so you've got to find a new word. I got a marketing
background. Newt Gingrich pointed that out. Mm-hmm. Well, Newt Gingrich coined the phrase green conservatism. You know, that might not have been the best phrase.
Look how him sitting on the couch with Nancy Pelosi work too. So I think you need to rethink your philosophy.
My philosophy? I'm not the one who coined the phrase.
Your terminology. Yeah. Well, there you go.
I could create my own. I was just going by that. That's just the terminology that Newt Gingrich, said. And what I was getting ready to say was, you know, that might, as you said, might need to be rethought because, well, he did make a good point, and I'm not trying to get off topic here, because, you know, I'm really not much for that, is, you know, even when someone even mentions anything environmental, there's like a knee-jerk reaction that, oh, well, if it's environmental, it must be liberal. But that's something that we can cover on Green Thursdays once we get back to that after the election in a few weeks.
Let me do the word game with you. When you hear the word Romney, what comes to your mind? So you wouldn't want Romney in any of your marketing strategies if you were trying to do something. Words matter. I mean, in my world as a builder, you know, it's sustainable. And sustainable is not just about, you know, am I going to save the planet by using less resources? It's also, you know, you have to think, you know, in multiple facets. You have to look at, it's just like aluminum. It's a nasty thing to take out of the ground, but you can recycle the damn thing over and over and over again. So it's called cradle to grave environmental thinking. You have to think past the item. I watched I told you before, I'm green building certified, you know,
we'll have to talk when it's time for me to try to build a bigger house.
and the other thing too is, you know, I remember being at I was also part of the Green Builder or the, you know, Green Builders Association, is, you know, as much as I could stand them, because they wanted us all to live in grass huts and crap, most of them in there. You know, we watched a film on all the sustainable technologies that were being implemented at China at our taxpayer expenses, by the way, folks. Okay, and they were all about this, you know, geothermal, you know, running all these systems into the ground. And because I grew up with an environmental health physicist for a father, okay, and have been around environmental issues my whole life, at the end of the thing, everybody's oohing and aahing, and they said, any thoughts? My first question, my response was, yeah, if we were communists, they could force all this stuff down our throat too. And everybody kind of chuckled because, you know, obviously in that field, there's going to be a bunch of socialists and communists or people who aren't but think they should be. We should be. But I said, here's the challenge. Nobody has done an environmental study on, let's say we got 10 million geothermal systems in our ground transferring energy. Has anybody even thought about the impact on our environment with that? And they're all like, oh, well, that's a really good question. I go, you know, you got to quit listening to marketing people and think past the issue. It's like if anybody wants to know about batteries and cars, all you got to do is go up to Canada and look at the poison in where they produce batteries, and then ask yourself, well, after those batteries wear out, what the hell are you going to do with them? It's one of the most caustic things in the world. Nobody thinks long-term. Everybody thinks emotional. That's the problem I have with the green industry. It's an emotionally driven thing. And growing up with a nuclear physicist, environmental health physicist, father, I was taught to think from start to end, cradle to grave. And that's so important for, you know, and I think that finally, you know, when you get past, I mean, think about it. The environmental issue is driven by fear. Romney was driven by fear. You know, you have to think past fear and sit down and really weigh out the cause and effect of things and longevity. Sustainability is a very key thing. Anyway, don't get me started.
Sustainability, conservation, and environmental protection. That is what the Green Thursdays on Bard's Logic will be about.
Yeah, we'll have
after
fun.
The election.
We'll have fun.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a good guy because I understand it, but I'm also a bad guy because I call BS when I see it. Like green products, man, you got 2% recycle in a hunk of lumber, and they call it green. And it's like, give me a break. You know what I mean?
Well, right now I'm thinking about upgrading, but right now I have one of those reel mowers, you know, the ones that are operated by you pushing it and it moves the blades.
Well, that's a sustainable green and better for your health.
Yeah, so actually, that's what I have to cut my grass. The only thing I don't like about it, one, you know, it doesn't do as good of a cut, and two, it, you know, it's if your grass gets thick, oh man.
Yeah, well, I got a Honda lawnmower, and I burn fossil fuels, and I can walk through wet grass, you know, 10-inch wet grass with it. So I guess the environment's going to have to forgive me.
I have cordless trimmers that eventually I want to get charged by solar panels.
Yeah, don't get me started on solar panels. Anyway, so, you know, here's the thing, back to the debate. The thing that I was visibly, emotionally pissed off when I heard that they were doing a vote runoff, I don't care. Even if Good won, it is not the point. The whole concept of this free and equal, and I was so fired up when I saw somebody was willing to get out there and get these candidates under certain criteria, because obviously all of the candidates running were not on there, but they had criteria, and they put them up there, and you and I have interviewed multiple people, and we know that it takes more than one time to get to the bottom of any issue, and also
is for certain.
And it takes a couple hours minimum with one guy just to get their platform out. And if you really, you know, we've never really dug into the Constitution Party platform. The thing's 20 some pages long, so you know you could do a whole week, you know, to really get the issues covered, and that's never really enough. That's just the surface. So the idea of when I was all fired up, promoted the crap out of this, and then I heard, what was that, Tuesday already, 2 days ago? And then I
yes,
heard there
was
going to be a vote off, and everybody's running around, you know, throwing, you know, posting stuff, saying, oh, we got to go vote. And I'm going, why do I need to vote? You know, and then I'm going, they're going to have two people debating. I'm going, this is not the runoff to the president of the United States. This is a chance to expose the third-party candidates. And I'm going, why are they doing this competitive runoff when that has nothing to do with who's going to win or lose? It is a total sham, in my opinion. And it pisses me off.
Tell us how you really feel about it, Chris. No.
Stick around.
You know, well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of had a flavor of a at least that idea, not the whole thing, of course, but the idea of having people, you know, vote in like that. I almost had one of those reality TV show ideas, you know, for like Dancing with the Stars. Oh, call in, you know. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, downgrade the debate. I'm just saying the idea of people voting for, you know, a candidate and then having, you know, like a popularity contest or something. I don't know. But,
I thought this was about battling the top two, not turn it into a reality TV show. And I actually have people that know people that are part of it that are reaching out to those people. And I don't know, maybe I'll get a conversation going with one of these guys. But, you know, it didn't fire me up at all, you know.
Yeah,
and let me
ask
you a question. Go ahead.
Sure.
And I'll ask my question. Go ahead.
Ask the question.
Okay, and we already knew Gary was going to do good, right? We knew that because he's got the, you know, a lot of Paul supporters. They know how to swamp anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy who sued the major debate people, you know, trying to get on the stage with him because he has the highest percentage of poll numbers for third party candidate. I would think he'd be the first guy saying this is not the way to do it. Just a thought.
Right. Well, you would think, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, it just depends. If he wants to self-aggrandize, you know, then he'll keep it as it is. But if he really wants to support, you know, the grassroots, you know, third-party, you know, we the people parties, then I would think that maybe he would suggest, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, have the other folks in here so we can all, you know, all be heard, because it is really about, you know, us and not the duopoly. And now it's like, well, are you going to mirror the duopoly on a debate? You know, so you're just pretty much mirroring what they did, you know, with the Romney and Obama.
Yeah, it's called exclusion. How about that for a word? And like I said, it isn't about Virgil Goode to me. I wanted to see him personally. I'd love to see him and Johnson up there because those are the two. Now, social positions aside, those are the two conservative constitutional candidates. Those are the people who say cut government, you know, quit giving crap away for free, pull the military.
Hey,
you know,
Chris, you go right on ahead. There's a call I've got to take. Hold on. Go with it. I'm going to let Mary, you're in.
Mary, talk to me.
Okay, great. Yeah, I watched the debate with my husband and my daughter, and I like parts of it in the sense that I like that they did have some different questions than the, you know, national debate, but I didn't think it was done. I didn't think they were very organized. I didn't feel like they followed the format very well, and it was a little bit disappointing in that way, but yes, I didn't know really for sure if they were going to do that, narrowing it down to two. But like you said, I mean, what's the purpose? I mean, they're not. It's not like they're running against, you know, Romney or Obama. I mean, why are they doing that? I mean, it doesn't make much sense. But
well, the only way they're going to change this is if people complain.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And in other words, it. I'm kind of one of those. I'm kind of feisty. If somebody doesn't treat me right, a business or whatever, and I don't like something about it, I just take my business somewhere else. And I'm kind of like that. I'm kind of black and white. And I'm trying not to be that way. I'm not. I'm visibly upset right now. Or you know what I mean. I don't like what I saw. I think it started out well and turned into a sham. And so the only thing that we can do now is reach out and let them know that it was stupid. I don't know who made the decision, but that person, in my opinion, should be fired and put somebody in there that can think past trying to be a reality game show or a Dancing with the Stars and just focus on what the primary purpose of this was for, and that was to expose the third party candidates to the general public, not to hold some game show.
Right.
And I don't know where they got that thinking, but it was obvious what they were doing, and it's like that person should go away and go back to television and make sure that people in your organization, if this is what you're going to stand for, that you guys stick with your primary goal, because my understanding of their primary mission was exposure, not a game show. And if you want to be a game show, then tell people that's what you're going to be. But if you want to be about exposure and fair and equal and all that kind of crap, then stick with it.
Right.
And don't hire
like
people who are going to divert you.
And their exposure, and we gave them so much exposure. It's unbelievable between the tweets and all the people and the different groups that promoted it, you know. So they.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel like promoting it anymore.
Yeah, I know, but we did. I mean, we have.
No, but I'm saying now I don't.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? That's the kind of person I am. You know, you know what I'm saying? What I was saying earlier, you go into a business and they don't treat you right as a customer, you know, whatever it may be. And then I'm the kind of guy that goes, well, fine, I'll go find someplace else to cast my vote. Your dollar is your vote. Your time is your vote. Promoting something, you know, taking your credibility with your friends, family, neighbors on Facebook is your vote. It's a vote of confidence.
Go ahead, Chris. No, I just want to welcome Mary. Thank you very much for calling in.
Sure.
I'm sorry I was in a rush to get you back on, but very important phone call that I could not take. I couldn't not take.
Did not take.
My double negative.
That
was a double negative. I apologize. I'm glad for that. But yes, it was a call I have been waiting for, and we shall be. Having Virgil come on in about a half an hour, so really looking forward to that.
Man, I got 3 hours of questions. I got to look at these questions.
He's only going to be able to give us 1 hour tonight. I tried to ask him if he could go longer, but after 11 o'clock, that's going to be a little late. So we got to try to cram it in 1 hour.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry, folks. You know, but. you know, what can you do, you know?
Right, right.
Well,
there was a lot of news going on flying everywhere today, so.
What?
Well, I mean, just lots of things were going on
rockets,
the internet. I know that, like, on my page, I put in just a few little things about, well, you know, I told you about that Christians against Obama, how they made me really mad. I mean, just by their post, it really made me mad. I mean, not even, they're not a group of mine. I just liked them at one point, and so I guess I see whatever they post. And they went on and said something like, for the people that say Mitt is evil, ask them what they are basing it on. It is probably an answer that someone with an intelligence of a third grader would express. Ignorance of the basics of the Mormon faith. To condone a man over his faith is, in my eyes, racism. And I was just like, what? Are you telling me that this is a Christians against Obama page? And it has,
well,
like,
yeah,
all these people, like, with a heart of people that, and Jesus is in the middle. And I just, like, going, this is so wrong. And so I went to Randy's page and pulled all those comments about Romney, the man that, you know, was the first one to support, you know, gay marriage and all these different things. I listed them. I didn't put Randy's name on there, but, you know, listed them all. And then I just said, what is evil to you? I mean, like, you know, and I went to college, you know, so don't compare me to a third grader, but, you know, what do you consider evil? And anyway, I guess they got mad and took the whole post off, but I mean, I was so mad at how they...
The truth. It was the truth. You put the truth on there.
And so they took it all off, and I was just like, because I went back to see, and I even asked Randy, I said, I just posted all your comments on there. I hope you don't mind. I mean, I didn't put his name, but, you know, I said, if you want to go in there and, you know, link your constitutional talk, you know, website or blog page or whatever, go ahead and do it or whatever. And I didn't ever hear back from him, but, you know, anyway.
Actually, you brought up something that is very important, okay, and it probably needs to be talked about because you did bring it up. I watched early on as we were starting to thin down to the wire, there was a group that their whole goal, and they were a new group, and I totally disagreed with them. And they came out, and they started doing this whole Mormon thing. And people, you know, would post crap on my site, and I kept saying, you know what, this is not right. It's a legal religion. He is what he is, and that's the end of it. Now, here's the important part. I don't care if you worship frogs, okay? Just don't tell me you're a Christian, all right? As a Christian, that offends me. Now, I'm not going to go in there, and I'm not going to tear your faith apart. You want to have a discussion about faith, I don't have a problem with it. You know, I love religious discussions. But the problem was, is every time anything about his faith came up on the internet, it turned into a religious bashing session. And that in itself is wrong. You know, I have my own personal opinions about their religion. That's between, you know what I mean? That's mine. But I am not going to go out and bash him by using his religion to bash him. So that I say is wrong. But like I said, I don't care if you worship frogs, just don't tell me you're a Christian. The other thing is, I've never had a problem tearing him to the ground on his policies. I never needed to go after his religion to tear him apart. He is a liberal progressive. He has not said a damn thing about anything to fix this country. If these people think he is the solution, they are fools. And that is a legitimate whatever you want to call it, you know, non-bigotry. I can prove that every step of the way down the line with his record, with what's come out of his mouth, with his – I mean, I could not believe Obama didn't rip him to shreds every time he bragged about balancing the budget of the Olympics. I have a video that shows John McCain on the House floor screaming at the top of his lungs, and only the way in the way John McCain can, saying, "Mr. President, this is an outrage. We need an investigation." You know, quoting all the numbers that was spent by the federal government on the Olympics, and I can't believe Obama didn't rip him to shreds on this. On that.
And Chris, hold on a second. Of course, you can continue after I let in another member of the Bard's Logic Political Talk panel, and that is Kelly Mordecai, the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch. Kelly, your mic is live.
Well, hey, guys. I'm sorry I'm a little slow getting to you. I just talked with a great patriot. He's down in L.A., and, of course, he was a Ron Paul fan, meaning liberty and all. And his name is Eusebio Posado. Of course, he's Hispanic. And he just, of course, he got a hold of my book, but he's been studying the Constitution and everything. He's just telling me all about it. He is so excited. And he, you know, appreciated my book, and he felt empowered after reading it. And he's just diving in, turns off the TV. Oh, my gosh, we could have talked for a couple of hours. I mean, this guy is on fire, and he's probably in his late 20s. And I'm like, gosh, we need more Americans like him. And so it was hard to tell him, I got to go. I was just listening and kind of, oh, gosh, it was just such a thrill. I mean, the youth, there are so many youth out there. You look at the Ron Paul Revolution, mostly youth. There's so many youth realizing, hey, there's something wrong. Let's get back to the Constitution. Ron Paul, others, of course, Virgil Good, have helped to motivate. I'm just so excited. We got to get him on the show. You hear his excitement about the Constitution and what we really need to be doing.
Kelly, I have a question for you. I'm scrolling. Have you ever, jeez, McGee, stuff moves around so fast on pages. Have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of Robbie Wells?
Rings a bell, but I'm don't remember.
He's a ex-military. He might still be in the National Guard. He was a coach for about 20 years. He spoke at the Paul Fest. I looked at his page today. I tripped over him today by accident. Somebody just mentioned something. I started reading his platform. And he's like a young Ron Paul with fire. And he's running for president. And I'm thinking, why in the heck didn't we find out about this guy and get him on here? You know, I just was wondering if you had heard of him.
The name rings a bell, that's all. I've been so busy with so many things, but anyway. Yeah, I mean, I think the youth are getting it. They really are.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey.
What I was going to say, Chris, is why didn't we see his name when we were figuring out who was on the ballots on the different states? It seems like we would have seen it if he's on very many states.
I don't know. It's crazy.
He must not be on very many states.
I'm not sure. I definitely want to talk to the guy because he's a fireball, you know. And he also ran for to be nominated on the Constitution Party. So there's some history there. And I don't have it all, but it's you know how I am. Something pops up and I hear something and I see something and next thing you know I'm curious.
That's all right.
You know.
That's a good thing.
Well, we got to put some of these youth on the Ron Paul track where they maybe get into city council, say a small town. I mean, my gosh, Sarah Palin went from small town to governor to a VP candidate. Now, if we can help these kids in their I didn't like being called a kid when I was in my 20s, but some of these 20-year-olds, we got to get them and help them get in their small town city councils, get them working up the chain of command on the Ron Paul track.
That would be good.
Well, I'm really, Kelly and I we actually spoke today a couple times. one of the things about, hold on, I'm typing. One of the things about the free and equal, for the first half anyway, debate.
Right.
You know, and we all exclaimed about, you know, obviously there was the legal drugs seemed to be the most exciting topic of the night, which is sad, but it is true. And
very
and I
sad,
wanna be,
yeah.
I want to do some research on that. I want to get some people on that, you know, have both sides of the argument and have been involved in it and have a real discussion about it. But, you know, it seemed like the most excited people got was when Stein or Rocky said, I'm going to give you crap for free without explaining how they're going to pay for it, and the legal drugs.
Stein and Gary Johnson, you know, next on the 30th. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I would assume that if everybody wanted free drugs, it would have been Rocky and Stein.
Well, I like how Virgil Good. I like how he said, "Oh, that's a states' rights issue." He said that several times. I certainly like that.
Mm-hmm. He knew he was outnumbered by, you know, more a liberal crowd.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
Well, I think the libertarians are quite well organized, and they probably flooded that debate and gave a lot of cheers. Kind of it might have been stacked, but anyway. And
I heard applause on conservative principles too. You know, not spending, and Johnson saying, "Hey, you know, free ain't going to work anymore," and Good, and you know, I heard that too. So it was it seemed like a fairly good mixed crowd. Maybe they were high. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Stein, that's the Green Party candidate, right?
Even
Virgil said, I know you're not going to like my response, but I'm not for legalizing that. He knew that they were going to not like that, but because of the crowd that was there.
I think he was one of the candidates that was being the most honest of all four of them. I really do. I think him and then, you know, Gary Johnson, but I think the one who was the most sincere and the most honest, because he was like, hey, look, if you want this and this and this, vote for these guys.
Right.
But, I mean, this is the reality. It's going to be tough. This is what we're going to have to do, you know, and... You know, well, we've seen what that got, you know, but it's a shameful situation where people are like, you know, that's where they stand. You know, I mean, look at the debate. Now it's unscientific, that Stein and Johnson, you know, were the ones picked, but that's kind of, you know, as I said earlier, an illustration on, you know, where a large group of Americans are at. And It's unbelievable that there's still so many people who have that mindset.
Well, I was surprised that Stein had done so well. Green Party, what? I mean, I consider the Greenies, I call them watermelons, you know, green for environmental on
communists.
The outside and red on the inside for communists. Yeah, they're watermelons. So,
well, and you know what you do with watermelon seeds, right? Yeah. So they don't grow. You spit them out. That's what you should do with the seeds that these type of environmental Green Party people.
I heard that phrase watermelon. I thought that's really cool. So anyway, I was amazed that she did so well. But notice how she went quickly into, you know, when they asked about the NDA, the question that the no moderator asked of the Elephant Donkey debate. They didn't ask about the NDAA, which should have been highest priority. So a news commenter already made a big comment about that. But she's like, you know, Stein's like, Green Party, she's like, this is unconstitutional, the principles that our founding fathers, like, what? Oh, that's right. They hate the leftist socialists, they hate the Constitution, those pesky amendments. But you know what? They kind of had this 180 because of the Occupy movement and these horror stories. It's like, I'd love to have a writing binge, it's real simple. Such and such was gathering together, the right to assemble, they're expressing their views. And then we lost the Constitution, what happened was they were speaking in Occupy, and then all of a sudden we started to have the UN come in, and then just they had to have billeting of soldiers, and there was no one around to protect her Second Amendment rights, so the UN guy had to live at her house. She didn't like that, and she started voicing more. All of a sudden, she gets thrown in the slammer under false accusation. Then all of a sudden she likes the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment where, you know, she found out she was being spied on, and all of a sudden she likes to use the Fifth Amendment requiring a grand jury indictment, due process, right to attorney, the right to confront your accusers, the Sixth Amendment, trial by jury. All of a sudden, she has a big conversion. All these other necessary rights are to protect your right of speech. And if Stein had some immediate turnaround, all of a sudden she likes the Constitution? It's just, what's the word I'm looking for? It starts with H. The next letter is Y. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I keep thinking a word that starts with I for idiot.
I'm going to interject here, folks. We've got another caller on the line, and it's someone we know well, and that is one of the hosts of the Tex and Rex show, and he's come on many occasions and taken some of his time to be a panel on Bard's Logic as well. And so without further ado, I will bring in Rex from the Tex and Rex show. Hello, Rex. Thanks for coming in.
Good evening, Robert.
Good evening.
Hi, Rex.
See, even if it's with the Halloween season, my favorite. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment briefly on the disappointment that we all probably have regarding the second free and equal debate that it'll be between Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because those are the two that have the highest chance of taking votes away from Obama. And even though Romney's polls have been rising against Obama, if you look at the swing states regarding the Electoral College, Obama's still considerably ahead of Romney. So it's not likely, unless there's vote rigging, in which case what we do really kind of doesn't matter, that Romney would be the winner. I tend to think that they seem to have selected Romney, but the point is that we got to also take votes away from Obama, and Virgil Goode is not going to take votes away from Obama. But Jill Stein might, and Gary Johnson can. I still think it would have been far better had Free and Equal been able to have all four candidates in a couple of debates, as opposed to just this kind of rundown. But that's okay. You know, the fact is that we're building something now. We're not seriously looking to affect the presidential election on November 6th. What we're trying to do is give the party standing for 2014 and 2016. And I think that's what we really need to focus on. So victory for us does not mean getting the one we want in office. Victory for us means laying the groundwork for restoring the coming disaster that's going to occur on November 6th.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I mean, the issue of the last debate, if Virgil Goode was on there, I would still be pissed. This is not what this was set up for. That's my position on it. You know, so I'm not going to back down from that. I think it's wrong. Their mission statement was to expose the candidates to the public. If that's their mission statement, they should have stuck with it. You know, if their mission statement was to do a game show runoff, that should be in their mission statement. And that's not how it was portrayed, and that's what I'm upset at. So anyway, that's just my input.
Yeah, I think this also tells me that, you know, as wonderful a job as Free and Equal did, why should we let them become the de facto commission on presidential debates for non-duopoly parties? I mean, if we're truly about free markets and liberty, then why don't we have multiple organizations have them? I mean, like I told Robert earlier, I think that he should have Rocky Anderson and Virgil Goode on to answer the same debate questions that Jill Stein and Gary Johnson get.
That'd be awesome. I'd like to do that.
Yeah, and I think if you suggested to them, they would probably both be pretty open to the idea. And I think the idea, you know, the whole point is to get the voices out there and get people to understand that they don't have to have this fear mentality of living within this block of voting for either corporatist Keynesian D's or corporatist Keynesian R's, but that they can actually vote for people who believe in the Constitution. And we're going to be talking about that actually tonight on Tex and Rex, if I may make a shameless plug, Robert.
Sure. Of course.
We're going to be talking about voter fraud. We actually have someone from your neck of the woods, Jim Condit Jr. from Cincinnati, Ohio, who is the Constitution Party candidate running against John Crying Tan Beef Jerky Boehner, which is a pretty big deal. So
oh, my goodness,
When is that race?
Now, just so that we're clear, Tex and Rex is not like Bard's Logic or even Constitutional Conservatives. We don't do interviews, so we're just having a conversation with this guy, and hopefully Robert can have him on in the future for a real interview. We're just going to be talking about, you know, how it's going with the race, and predominantly on voter fraud, because Mr. Condit has been an advocate for preventing voter fraud since the Nixon election, and so he's got a lot of valuable information about what's going on, especially given the fact that out there in your neck of the woods, Robert, it looks like one of Romney's sons owns a significant interest in your voting machines, which
you guys are
allegedly one of the major swing states, and it's kind of interesting that the son of a candidate is in any way allowed to own voting machines. If that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what is. So, we're going to be talking about that stuff tonight at 11 o'clock after your interview with Mr. Good.
Now, Rex, let me ask you this. Is he running in the current season, 2012, against Boehner?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's running against him. Robert can actually go to the polls on November 6th and vote for Jim Condit Jr. instead of John Boehner.
Yeah, he's part of Wag the Dog, which has been around for a while and battling the I've heard of him before.
Yeah.
And the count, Wag the Dog, Count the Vote people, those are all people we want to get. We want to start getting this message out.
Absolutely.
Kelly here. I actually know Jim Condit. I'm with Watch the Vote 2012. He's kind of like the founder, and we got core team conference calls every week. He's a really great guy, and he has been absolutely passionate about this for a very, very long time. He explained electronic election fraud, vote rigging, in ways that more than I ever wanted to know that I learned from him, as well as doing my own research. And so he's obviously a true patriot, loves the Constitution, hates the Federal Reserve, yada, yada. But he has really been exhausting himself to make the American people aware of this chronic problem. And by the way, I had this realization today about electronic election fraud. I mean, look, all of our work and political and ideology studying the Constitution is irrelevant if our votes are electronically flipped. It's all pointless, and our whole system is really it needs to be a system with so much more accountability. Get rid of the machines like in Europe. That's kind of a preview for Jim Condit. But what I realized today was the media tricks. Again, the media tricks.
Yeah.
Notice how they post, oh, my gosh, the Republican was arrested in Virginia for destroying voter registration forms. And then you've got same problem there was in Florida, same problem in California. And then they go, oh, yeah, this sweet old lady in a nursing home, her absentee ballot was stolen. And then they talk about the zombie voters, you know, people who are deceased. And then they talk about, voter ID laws. I was like, no, wait.
Zombie voters? I thought those were Romney voters.
Romney, kind of a nice little put it in a poem somewhere.
The zombie Romney, Romney zombies,
But I realized today, the media will do everything possible to get Americans to get their mind off of electronic election fraud.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the other day that I don't remember if it was on a video. I got to go back and find it. But I heard it was like $600 million spent on these machines by the federal government, not including the state and county and all that kind of crap. I'm like going, are you kidding me?
Well, there's a recent story.
That's incredible.
Well, there's a story of in North Carolina. I mean, I'm tired of having my eyes open to this because I keep seeing these stories. All right, a woman in North Carolina went to early vote thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to vote for the Romulan. And so she hits Romulan on the touchscreen. Oh, you voted for Obama. This is the final thing, you know. Say, no. Let's go back. She goes back. It's Romney. and it goes Obama again. You should try that three times, twice. You get the clerk. The clerk says, oh, we're sorry. We just have to reset. Well, no. No reset. It was programmed. Something weird is happening. It was in The Simpsons. They did the same thing with Bush and Gore, where Homer Simpson goes to the electronic machine. He hits, I want to vote Al Gore. You have voted once for George Bush. No, I said Gore. You voted twice for Bush. No, and he kept pounding it like, get it right. You have now voted for George Bush five times.
You know, but you know
it's
why?
It's not really funny. It's really not.
You know why the machine kept picking Obama when she pressed Romney, don't you?
Because it was
no difference. There's no difference between the two. The machine couldn't tell the difference. Sorry, I just had to do that. I had to say that. Oh, my God. Oh, are we nuts or what? I'll tell you, Rex got quiet.
I was just letting you all have the floor. I can always chime in. But are we nuts? Yeah, we're nuts because we're not going to go along with the pre-programmed decision-making that they're trying to put in our heads with their subtle propaganda on television and in the news and the newspapers and even on the internet. So, you know, it is said that that all the advancements in human history were made by those that were not considered sane. So we are a little nuts,
I wouldn't
trade calm sanity for to be a slave for this. I'd rather be nuts and know what's going on. I mean, it's frustrating sometimes. I'll tell you, sometimes I think, man, if I was ignorant, wouldn't this be a lot easier?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be as under as much stress. I wouldn't be so concerned.
Do you really want to take the blue pill?
No, I don't want to take the blue pill. I'll take the red pill every time, even if it's going to be difficult. I'll take the red pill because reality's where you want to be. Don't be managed by mind control, the opinion makers. I mean, I've got people telling me, voting third party is voting for Obama. What kind of idiotic logic is that? Voting for Obama is voting for Obama. Voting for Romney is voting for Romney. Now, granted, whether you vote Romney or Obama, you're going to get the same crappy policies, but they're two different guys. They just happen to share the same ideologies. But voting for a third party is voting for neither one of them. So, you know, well, you're handing the election to Obama. No, I'm not. Why would you vote for somebody you know can't win? I don't know that a third party can't win. Do you? I mean, there's no reason to think that a third party cannot win. A third party can win. It is entirely possible. If neither one of these jerk-offs get 270 or exactly what Chris would, if 20% of those 90 million who never vote show up and vote third party, it could happen. Now, is it a long shot? Yes. Does that mean you don't try? No, but I don't know that. I mean, you know, you only got a 50-50 shot with Obama and Romney. So why are you throwing your vote away on a guy who doesn't stand for any of your principles just to get Obama out, where there's only a 50-50 shot he's going to win? Actually, it's less than that. I think, you know, if we were having fair elections, it looks as if Obama would probably secure the nomination the presidency, because when you run candidates that are so similar in ideology and policy, people don't change. You know, so the only way Romney's going to win is by cheating.
Did you say ideology or idiotology?
It's the same thing.
Okay, so who knows about the article about that the UN troops are going to be here and the Texas Attorney General threatened to arrest them?
No, not troops, vote watchers, vote observers.
Well,
what's up with the vote? Vote watchers, what the heck's up with that?
I don't know.
Well,
it's been going on for a long time.
Well, could you imagine the mileage the media will get out of this if it actually happens? They're going to report on UN vote watchers. We're not going to be looking at electronic election fraud.
Yeah. Well,
this started with Bush.
This started in Bush's era, so it's just another scare tactic.
Yeah.
We send people to the other countries and do the same thing. It's, who knows? It's some big love fest. You know.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, Chris, you know the YouTube you sent me about O'Donnell talking about a third party.
Yeah, I just posted it. It's great.
I think Robert should play that on the air. It's about what
I was going to do it, but Robert, when I called Robert, his internet was still down, so I wasn't going to add any complexity to his life at that time. But it
I
would
appreciate
have been a perfect
that.
Start.
Yeah, it was getting pretty complicated, that's for certain.
Have you seen it, Robert? It's great. Lawrence O'Donnell, who's been around for a long time, a newscaster, talks about voting third party, and he said exactly what we've said, is that in non-swing states, you know, you're not throwing anything away, because I live in Washington. Romney hasn't even wasted one dime in this state because he knows he will not win here. So what am I going to do? I'm going to support a third party and help them get ballot access. Now, he doesn't explain the ballot access thing, which is sad because it's important. But he says in all these he said the whole election's eight states determine it. These politicians, you know, treat you like crap. They don't even come to your state and hold a rally because they know it doesn't matter. So why are you letting them crap on you and giving them your vote? You know, and that video is just he explains it well. He says what we've been saying for months. You know,
and
it's very important.
He said that this way. They don't come to my state. My state's a slam dunk for this person or that person. In the eight elections I voted in, I think it was eight or six or ten, whatever. He says my vote didn't count. My vote didn't count. It was already predetermined in my state, so I was voting for somebody and it didn't even count, except once.
Well, but doesn't this prove that you guys are left-wing shills trying to derail the conservative Republican from defeating Barack Obama? Because, you know, that guy is a liberal journalist, and you're repeating his words. So aren't you just left-wing nuts pretending to be conservatives?
You mean because he's honest? Yeah.
Let's be clear.
I mean,
he was honest. He was honest this time. He's not always.
But... No, but what he said was true, and also, what's the gal that we've played a bunch
Rachel
of her videos?
Maddow.
Because she was the only one willing to expose the voter fraud, her and Ben Swan. So,
yeah.
You know, in this case, she did good reporting, so, you know.
Doesn't that just piss you off? I mean, it just aggravates the crap out of me to have to agree with these snarky libtard commie journalists because for once they don't have to lie to smear the so-called right. It just drives me friggin' nuts that I have to – but, I mean, you know, if you're going to be fair and objective, you're going to say, well, you know what, on this, they got it right. I mean, they don't have to lie this time.
One of Rachel Maddow's – this is a couple of years ago. She blasted Obama regarding his stands on indefinite detention.
Yeah.
She goes – Obama made this, and she has this little smirky smile, the way she does it, sarcastic. Obama talked for and against the Constitution in the same sentence, and she played clips from him, and your draw is dropping. I mean, wait. Then it dropped again because Rachel Maddow did it.
Well, here's the problem. What people don't understand about Obama is he's just as much of a corporate globalist as Romney is. It's just that he has Marxist concepts that he believes the government should control it all, and the corporate globalists like Romney want the corporations to control it all, but it's all done through government anyway. It's the same crap. It just has a little different flavor about who takes your money and who gives you your benefits back.
Well, I have some good news with that regard.
Good.
Not only are Republicans awakening, or former Republicans are awakening to the corporations, the some people on the left and the Democrats, the Occupy group, they know the corporations are in both parties, and they're starting to move towards whom? A third party.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kelly, I hate to interrupt you, and I hate to interrupt everyone else, but I think at this time I will be bringing in our very special guest for this evening. We have the honor and the privilege to have here on Bard's Logic again. And I will open up the mic. Mr. Good, thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you tonight?
Very fine, Robert. It's good to be with you again.
Good. Very well. Yes, we've got a whole bunch of folks here on the line, as well as listening live on chat, and then from the Bard's Logic website and Blog Talk Radio, and sure some other places. But I know we've got a lot of questions, so what's your thoughts of us just getting straight to it?
That's fine.
Okay, great. Now, we've got some, maybe a little mix, some of the questions from the presidential debate, but we also probably the first one that you might not have gotten the opportunity to ask. But we also got some questions here that Chris put together that's in lieu of or part of the debate that was the other night. So what's your thoughts on that?
That's fine with me also.
Okay, great. All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. And I think the first question is on the debate. So, Chris, go ahead. The most recent
Mr.
one, right, Chris?
Good. How you doing? I've talked to you before, so we've interviewed you before. So, and I really appreciate that you taking the time to come here. What did you think of the debate last night, and how did you feel it went?
I thought it was good in the way that it certainly brought to many more people a much broader perspective of questions and important matters that the Democrat-Republican debate hasn't done, in my view.
Right. I mean, did you feel, I guess, you know, as a guy that has to stand up there and go through that process, did you think that they did a good job opening that door up?
Oh, yeah, they spent some time on it and had some media coverage, and I think that was good. So, yeah, I thought they handled it well.
Okay. Let me spin off of that one. The one thing, and this, I'm just going to throw this on the table.
Sure.
I did not know that they were going to do this runoff thing, and that one, that really surprised me. You know, the runoff down to where the two people who win, you know, like some kind of reality game show. I thought this was going to be a couple debates, and everybody got a chance to answer all the questions, because obviously they're going to be different questions. I was a little disappointed in that. And even if you would have won that runoff, I still would have been disappointed, because I didn't feel that that was the mission of what they were trying to accomplish. What's your input on that?
Well, I didn't know they were going to do that either at the time. But there's going to be another debate on November the 4th at 7:30 p.m. in Washington with the...
Oh, really?
All the four that were there, and that would probably be the last debate of this election season.
Who's doing that?
Ralph Nader, and I believe that with his name recognition and his having run in the past in third-party situations, I think he'll probably attract a good audience. And it's at a restaurant in Washington where a lot of media persons hang out, so he's hoping that will attract more too.
I'm so fired up. I'm glad that was a breath of fresh air, because I was really feeling like we the people were getting shorted. Go ahead.
And I'm going to apologize to you, Chris. I actually recall hearing about that the other day. And I guess with a lot of other stuff that was going on the past couple of days, I didn't tell you about that. I mean, I think that's one of the things that we talked about, was that Tuesday already or yesterday? And I guess I forgot to tell you, Chris, sorry.
That's okay. Hey, this is what we're all about, man. We're just running as fast as we can, catching up with ourselves. Why don't you go on, like, number four, number five, and just – do you think, Robert, and I'll roll in.
Okay, well, we'll jump up, is term limits. What have you seen in your years in Congress that brings you to the conclusion, and how does it get past the legalistic process?
Well, in Congress, I've consistently supported term limits. In the late 1990s, term limits came up many times. We may have had as many as 10 votes on term limits. I supported nearly every bill. There might have been one or two that I didn't like for some reason. And other people had I introduced one term limits measure that called for a 12-year maximum federal service. In other words, you could be in the House 6 years and in the Senate 6 years, but that would be it. Or you could spend two terms in the Senate. Or I think the House, if you have term limits, you could go with four-year terms for the House. You could let them have three terms, and that would be it. But I very much support term limits. What the situation now in the U.S. House of Representatives, particularly for districts that are somewhat competitive and very competitive, it's a constant campaign. You're constantly trying to raise money, and you're worried about going to the next fundraiser. And it needs to be a much more focus on the legislation and doing what's best for the country. And with term limits, you would have that situation because people would know they'd have to make an impact and do what's right for the country rather than just constantly worrying about what's going to play to the voters in my district. And it would make the members of Congress a little less district-oriented and more country-oriented, in my view.
That was beautiful. And that rolls into Robert's next question.
Yep. We've got about the top two and super PACs. Do you think there is enough public outrage to what the super PACs have done in this election cycle to force a change in Congress? And what is the process?
No, it's going to take someone like me winning an election to scare them into changing super PACs. And political action committees. Political action committees, I don't like them either. You really don't know who they are that are controlling them. A few people control nearly every PAC. If it's a union PAC, the union leadership or someone they designate controls it. And then if it's a business PAC, there's a few people in that company that control it. You just give your money and turn it over to them. And I think the donation should be limited to individuals with lots of transparency, knowing their addresses and who they're working for. And so you know who's contributing to campaigns. We see all these super PAC ads on television. I don't know who the persons are that put up the money.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with you, and I think your answer is very interesting. The fact is, it's going to take somebody, you mean like you as in a third-party candidate, to break the hold, or because of how you stand?
It's going to take somebody making that a big issue, which I've tried to do, in order to get persons more focused on it. They really don't like super PACs, but the media is not – the mainstream media is not going to go after super PACs. They're getting too much money out of it. I don't think ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox, any of them are going to really go after super PACs in a big way. They benefit so much from the super PACs because they're spending so much money with them.
That's going to be something we'll keep our eyes on. Okay, let's jump to I want to, and we've interviewed you before, and I know and multiple Constitution Party people, so I know you guys' foreign policy stance, but I wanted to twist it a little bit and ask more of a, and most of the listeners that follow our show, they're on track with NDAA, internment camps, all the things that, so this is a natural place for you to express yourself on those things, but what would define a proper war on terror? Because war on terror is definitely an odd one for us. And how would you define a better plan than what we're doing?
To really know what you have to do, you've got to have the best intelligence you can get. And it would vary from country to country. I don't know about an overall design. Overall scheme, I believe financially we can't afford to be in every place in the world trying to get people to believe and use our values, because they're not going to do it. They've got their own set of values and their view of the world and or their particular religion, and they really don't want us trying to tell them how they should think and what's right and what they should do. And on that, you want to have the overall policy. If you had one, it's very simple. It's defend the United States.
Does that, what about the overreach of government into all of our, turning us into suspects in this whole process on the war on terror? I mean, obviously more and more people are, really standing up to that, and it seems like they're just buckling down more and more and more and more. They're not dealing with the root of the problem, and now they're turning us into the, they're throwing us into the mix. I mean, when's that going to break? I mean, what's it going to take to break that loose?
World events that you and I can't even foresee at the current time.
Interesting. Okay, Robert.
Okay, Chris. Yes, this is a question that was on the first presidential debate. I'd like to see how you would have, you'd answer that given the opportunity. If you were elected, what would you do about the legislative paralysis or gridlock due to partisan politics?
I think I could deal with it better than most, because I've said that if I'm elected, I'll serve only one term. And part of the reason for gridlock is if Obama's in, the Republicans, and rightly so, are going to be fearful of him. If we work with him too much and make him look good, then he comes and hammers us in the campaign. We need to be out front and hammer him first. And it's the same way if Romney were to win, the Democrats are going to be fearful. And, he wants going to want to run for re-election. And he's going to promote himself within the party, and he's going to have to tear into us, which is true. And with me, if I were to get elected, I wouldn't be out there working against candidates. I'd take stands on positions and urge that people believing a certain way for certain issues should be who would be elected, but I wouldn't go campaigning with the Democrat, whoever it is, or campaigning with the Republican, whoever it is. And I think that would make for a much better situation in Washington, where you'd have greater harmony. Because, just as I said with term limits, it's so much focus on the next election. What's going to happen to me in the next election? They can say, well, you know what, if Goode has said, he's publicly said he's not running but one time, if he's not going to be out there trying to make us look bad, to make himself look good, I think just having a situation like that, both sides, while they would still be at each other, they would be willing to work with me maybe more than either Obama or Romney.
Interesting. I like that. I do like that. And I've also heard that. I've heard that play into the concept of, in conversations we've had with some of your down ballot folks, in the Constitution Party, about, well, what if one guy from the Constitution Party ends up in Congress? I mean, how much can you get done? And actually, gentleman from Las Vegas, Nevada, that was running, he said, you wouldn't believe how powerful you would be as the one independent person in that house, because everybody would want your vote. And,
right,
and so
that's
that was
true.
That was good.
If the division in the House is close, now if the Republicans had a 20-vote margin in their caucus over the Democratic, the independent, or the third-party person would not have much influence. If it's close, it'd be a lot of influence. Not close, very little influence.
Okay.
You had a situation like in the 30s, right after the Depression, where the Democrats had overwhelming numbers in the House. There were a few independents, but they had very little impact. But now, if you were in a situation where it was 217 to 217 and you were the 218th, the amount of influence you would have would be astronomical.
Interesting. So that's part of, I'm sure that's part of the major goals, and that'll get into actually a question I have a little bit later if we have time. On the economy, I've watched this whole primary right on through the debates, and even a little bit in the wasn't even last night, it was the night before in that debate, and it seems like every time they ask an economic question, they get somebody on there, or the question's skewed towards, you know, I'm a college student and how am I going to pay my bills, and you get this pull at your heartstring marketing technique. And it drives me nuts because nobody wants to talk about the root problems. Can you give an overview of, you know, three or four or five components that it's going to take to turn this economy around?
Sure. I think I've said this repeatedly, and this neither Obama or Romney want to do that. We cannot continue to bring in so many foreign workers until unemployment is under 5%. And
this is one of my favorite things, I must admit. I'm sorry.
Yeah. H-1B workers, which get in green carders, they have taken jobs from U.S. citizens. You get a green card, you can work anywhere in the country you want to. Now, I know Gary Johnson said he had work visas, but that's the same thing. Now, the H-2A worker, and it would, I think, behoove every presidential candidate to become a little bit more familiar with the immigration system that exists. It is, it's not as they've painted it. I know what Romney says, I love immigration. Well, I don't, because I saw enough of how much it costs us. I think a lot of changes need to be made in it. But they really haven't talked about that at the national level. Obama and Romney are very little difference on that, in my view. Obama's not going to call for a moratorium on green card admissions until unemployment's under 5%, and neither will Romney. Romney and his big money backers, they want more of H-1B workers in. They want more green carders in because it drives down wages, and that's what they want. They want the biggest margin possible. And I don't blame them for that, but don't undermine the country to do it. And that's what's happening. They're just bringing in so many that it's costing U.S. citizens jobs. And Democrats want them to come into the country because a lot of them are third worlders, and most of them are going to vote Democratic. So you don't have anyone up there really that's fighting for the average citizen on the street that wants a job. And these can be, some of them, very highly skilled persons, but they bring in foreign workers that will work for less, probably from Asian countries. And that's one thing you can do to help the economy and the unemployment situation. Another thing is repeal Obamacare. And I do agree with those that want that repealed. The cost of it is one aspect, but the biggest thing is the uncertainty about the rules and regulations. And any time you're going to hire 16,000 IRS agents, they're going to be out really harassing small businesses, and small businesses are fearful. So a lot of them say, well, I'm not going to hire any more people.
Yep.
We've seen that trend ever since Obamacare was enacted, or go ahead, or passed.
Your observation is right the way it is. I mean, a lot of small businesses, they don't want to hire anyone else. Or some of them even say, well, we're just going to build in that we'll pay the penalty for every one of them, and they can get their own insurance.
Right.
Which, in, you know, if if you believe in the philosophy of Obamacare, that's contrary to that. So that's two things we can do. Another thing is in the area of trade agreements. We don't do enough to promote manufacturing in this country. Again, you've got the influence of persons that are big lobbyists, have a lot of PAC monies. Some of the mass retailers, they wanted to get everything as cheaply as possible and have it made in China and let them do the manufacturing or do it in Vietnam or do it in Mexico and then just bring in the product here. But that's not making something in manufacturing is a wealth creator. And
yep.
we are in the wrong direction on that.
Is that it? Are your three key things?
Yeah, those are the three main things.
Well, and I've heard you say before about forcing a balanced budget. And
right.
let me
follow up on them.
This trade agreement thing was actually a question that I had listed farther down, but you brought it up, so I kind of want to follow up on it. I heard you in the third party response. Debate to the second debate. I know it sounds weird, but that's what it was. And you brought that up multiple times, and I realized that I'm a little bit ignorant on this stuff. Can you, it's because, we had the NAFTA thing, and obviously we had, I live in Seattle area, so we had, the protests and everything that went on, and then I know Bush came in behind it and did something, and I know that Obama's bragging about all his, trade agreements. Can you expose more of why of the details of why these agreements are destroying our economy and our country?
Well, they're not for everyone. The aspects of the trade agreements, I think the mass retailers, for example, have fared better under the trade agreements than has manufacturing as a sector.
Mm.
They like it. They get to bring in goods made very cheaply in another country, and it costs them less. But
right.
What they're also doing at the same time, they say, well, this is free trade, yeah. But what you're doing, your customers have got to have the finances to buy something, and if you're continually driving down the wages of those that have to purchase something, that's going to hurt you in the long run. So the trade agreements, it varies from everyone. I know I didn't support CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement. Again, I felt it caused us to lose manufacturing jobs that we shouldn't have. I didn't support NAFTA. We had a trade surplus with Mexico prior to the adoption of NAFTA. A few years after the adoption of NAFTA, we have a trade deficit. And I would know recall it well. The proponents of more trade with China, PNTR, Permanent Normal Trade Relations with China. Before that, it was called MFN, Most Favored Nation Trade Status with China. And then they changed the name to PNTR. They would frequently say, well, we'll pass these agreements, and our trade with China will be at a less of a deficit, and it'll increase our balance of payments, and we won't have a negative every year. But that hadn't been the case at all. It's exactly as I suspected it would be. The deficit, trade deficit with China is even more.
Do you think that this is this is planned when these people aren't stupid, these globalists and these mega corporations and things like that? Do you think that they set this stuff up and then come in and buy those politicians off through lobbyists to get these deals pushed through?
Yeah. I mean, they want them because it will enhance their margins, and the trade agreements probably benefit the super rich more than anyone else because they have the people that can influence the negotiators. and those that are crafting these agreements. And there are some real winners under these trade agreements.
I love that term. That's awesome. And we're actually going to end up, I want to do some radio shows on this stuff in the future, so I really appreciate you opening our minds more to it.
And I want to move on to, and you mentioned deficit on a few occasions, and also small businesses. And on the most previous debate, you're talking about how the other folks' plans will actually increase the deficits while yours will not. So that part of the question from the first presidential debate has already been answered. But to continue with it, would you explain what your tax plan for small businesses, corporations, and the middle class would be, and what tax plan would it be for job growth?
All right. The tax situation is this. I think we would be better off to shift to a consumption tax than an income tax, but I'm not ruling out one over another until I'd want a lot more input on details. First of all, I have always consistently voted for the legislation that would end the current tax code by a date certain in the future. And what that would do would force Congress to act to do what I think it should do, and that's to make our U.S. tax code, whatever it is, simple and fair. And that's certainly not the case now with the current IRS code. The more lawyers you have, the more accountants you have, and the more money you spend, the better you're going to be with regard to paying taxes. And that's just reality. And we should have something that's simple and fair. You got a number of options. One option is to have a consumption tax. Now, I co-sponsored the fair tax. Fair tax is a national sales tax. They started out at 17%, but so many people argued that the national sales tax of 17% when you bought groceries or when you bought a house or when you got your car filled up with gasoline hit a lot of persons that didn't have much very hard, and it was so regressive. Any sales tax, validly said, is regressive, but everybody pays the sales tax. That's a plus for it. So they changed it to the fair tax sponsored by John Linda. And I commend John Linda for all his work on this and looking at it. You pay 23%, but if you bought a new house, you'd pay 23% more. But then the argument, the proponents of it say, well, the house will cost less, maybe 20% less, maybe 25% less, because you won't have everything built into it that you have when you have the income tax. And
right.
that's some argument on that.
Kelly here. Virgil, I want to go ahead and ask you a question, if I may, about
sure.
The IRS and all that. Gary Johnson is proposing a fair tax, quote-unquote fair tax. One of the problems
That was what I co-sponsored. The fair tax, John Linda's fair tax, they switched it from a 17% rate to a 23% rate, increased it, so they could give a prebate. A prebate is a check in the mail, about $180 a month for every person in the country. And they do that so they can say, well, if you're elderly and you're just getting Social Security, we're going to send you this check every month to help you with your food cost and your necessities of life. But the problem with the prebate is, and again, this jacks you right up from 17% to 23%, the prebate, which is a check in the mail, you're going to have, excuse my dog. That's my dog.
The organic nature of Blog Talk Radio. You'll got to love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
what you get with the prebate is you got to have a bureaucracy. And the way they had it set up, you got let's say $150. It was somewhere between $118 and $180 a month per person. If you had 10 kids, you got a check of $150 for every kid, plus yourself and your spouse. And you'd have to have another IRS to administer the thing. There are so many split families now. Who has the custody for the majority of the month? Who's going to get the check this month? It would just, it's a never-ending thing. So my suggestion was on the prebate, if you have a prebate, that it go to adults only and only to U.S. citizens that live in the United States. If you're overseas buying stuff, why do you need a prebate? Because you're not paying the sales tax. I think that
right.
would have enhanced the fair tax proposal, which Gary Johnson says it fall. But I can tell you, a 23% rate, anything that high, you're going to get a lot of persons thinking up every way possible to avoid paying such a high rate. And they will.
You've got to
have a consumption tax that will be successful, which is a sales tax. You're going to have to broaden the base. And would that mean it would just be on new items? Because they had it, you'd have to pay a 23% sales tax when you bought a new home. But if you bought a used home, you don't have to do that. If you buy a new car, it's 23% sales tax. But if you buy a used car, there's none. And my view is a 23% sales tax is going to be very difficult to enforce unless you have a lot of IRS agents. They won't be called IRS agents going around making sure everybody pays the money. So with the sales tax, which is the fair tax, which Johnson advocates, and let me say, I prefer a sales tax to an income tax, but I want something that's simple and fair, and that means I don't want the lower the rate, the more the compliance.
Well, Virgil, I want to throw out another perspective, see what you think about this. I like the system of apportionment where based on the percentage of the population, say, for example, California might have 10% of the population of the whole country. You know, 50 states, that's only 2% per state if it was linear, but California is 20%, like 10% population. I'm just roughly guessing here. So 10%, the federal government says, all right, here's our projected budget. 10% California, you collect from your people however you want and cut us a check. That's based on the last census. This is apportionment. The reason why I favor this is because the states say, okay, we collect the money, you get a check, that's it. We don't get any rebates. We don't get any grants with heavy strings because our current system and a flat tax system causes the federal government to give money back to the states, and the federal government says, okay, you'll have the money if you do A, B, C, D heavy strings, ergo terrible control of the states by the federal government. That's why I don't favor a flat tax even, or a fair tax, or any sales tax. I like it. What's your thoughts on apportionment, I guess, is my question.
That has been suggested, and a number of persons in the Constitution Party say that that's the way you should just collect taxes on duties and customs and then have apportionment. I'd want to see the greater detail on how much the states would pay. Would California, within its current financial shape, would they pay? That would certainly give more clout to the states in the federal system if you had the states giving the money to the federal government.
I understand it's based on population from the last census. California's got 10%, write a check for our projected budget, 10% of it. South Dakota has like maybe 0.5%, North Dakota 0.33%, whatever. That's your share. based on population.
Right.
And again, the big advantage is the government, the federal government, doesn't keep our money and say, okay, all right, we got this big chunk of change here. California, you're going to do this. Louisiana, you're going to do this. Ohio, you're going to do this, or you ain't getting the money. That is the problem.
And if you did it, if you had it, the states contributing like you do with apportionment, the states would definitely have a lot more influence.
Be able to regulate themselves and be free. That's kind of my point of this compared to our current systems. With the apportionment, they write a check and that's it, done. Here's your money, you do with it what you need to. We don't want any back.
A fair tax,
the flat tax,
yep.
The IRS has that kickback system with heavy strings.
What if the state said, who's going to, it would be an apportionment system just based on population. But what happens if a state after 5 years has seen a big decrease in population? Would you adjust it in 5 years or would it be a 10-year set formula?
Good point.
That's based on the census every 4 years.
Well, now the census is every 10 years.
Every 10 years. Okay. Well, yeah, you got a good point there. Yeah, you'd have to reduce the frequency of the census to every 4 years or something.
Oh, wow. And let me tell you, those census people are pushy. I got a story I could tell, but I'm not going to about the census last time around. But I'm going to move on to the next question because we've got a bunch of them still. We've got about 19 minutes left.
Okay.
What are your plans for Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security?
Well, Social Security and Medicare, because of the way they're paid for, I'm not for turning them upside down. I disagree with Ryan's plan to turn Medicare into a voucher system. People have paid Medicare for years and years and years in the anticipation that they would have Medicare Part A coverage, which pays hospital bills. And it pays all of a hospital bill with certain guidelines, and most health care providers will take what Medicare pays if it's a Part A. And that is where people have paid in and paid in and paid in for years and years and years. Now, if they come and change that for everyone over 50, as soon as they get to be 65, they're going to have to negotiate with insurance companies. They're going to have to negotiate with health care providers, and they'll probably have to bear a lot more out-of-pocket costs, certainly more than they do under the current system. And they would rightly say, in my view, well, we specifically performed on this agreement. We paid in taxes for 35 years, and they've done a U-turn on us. On Medicare and Social Security, Social Security is owed $2.5 trillion.
Oh, my God.
It's the number one item in the federal debt. Now, you haven't heard Romney mention that. Romney won't mention it because I was with him in the House. His constant goal was to get Medicare cut. I just disagree with that, certainly as to Part A. Some parts of Medicare are general funded. That's another situation. Now, Medicaid is generally funded. No one has paid years in advance looking to Medicaid because it wasn't special funded. But with Social Security and Medicare, you have an account that you've been paying into basically. If you live to be 65, you probably paid into it 40 years.
Right.
And so I don't think Social Security and Medicare aren't comparable with Medicaid, not comparable with food stamps, not comparable with temporary assistance to needy families, not comparable with public housing, because the taxpayers, it's just a shift of money from the taxpayers to cover these things, and they haven't paid into a fund for Medicaid or any of those other things that I just mentioned. So that's a clear difference between, and I know the major networks, they refer to entitlements and say everything is entitlement. Well, I totally disagree with that. I think it's only two entitlements, Medicare and Social Security, and that's because most people that want benefits have specifically performed for years and years and years.
Wow. Good, great, great,
good distinction.
Okay, so, no, that was really good. I appreciate that. Let me roll down here. I have kind of a, I don't know, you might think it's an odd question, but, you know, we studied your party pretty aggressively, and obviously the questions and the comparisons, you know, the Ron Paul movement, where are they going to go? When you look at, and you've known Ron Paul, you've been in
right.
Congress with him, and
very
I also
nice
noticed
person, a genuinely sincere, and he and his wife, just in my opinion, just super nice, very kind, and definitely a philosophically based representative in Congress.
Well, we're starting to find out you're that way too. And I guess that leads me to my question. In your policies, you know, in the platform, obviously you have the Constitution Party platform, but there's also your personal, you know, history and beliefs. How would you, you know, I don't know, a percentage of things that you feel that you guys are parallel on? Can you kind of give, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
kind of
we're
an overview?
Parallel on it. Sure, we're parallel on a lot of things. The Constitution Party's platform and in my platform, we're pro-life, we're pro-traditional marriage, we're very strong for the Second Amendment, we're strong for following the Constitution. Don't get involved in a war unless Congress makes a declaration. We're both for basically eliminating foreign aid and auditing the Fed, and having individual rights and your constitutional rights not being abridged without due process by the federal government. So there's a lot that we agree on. There's some things I don't fully agree with, like I'm not for the not for changing the method of selection of U.S. senators to have them selected by the state legislatures like it did in the 19th century. I think term limits would be the best thing that would help the U.S. House and help the Senate. You wouldn't have persons being up there forever. And I think the changing it to a term limit situation would bring in fresh ideas with more people focusing on doing what's best right now for the country.
Interesting. You know, I know a lot of people don't think they totally understand some of his positions because he gets a lot of people, you know, I've heard Dr. Paul talk about abortion and he's not for it. I was reading something the other day and he said, you know, right now the way the law is written, you know, and the way the Roe v. Wade court decision was made, it does put it back in the state's hands, but it doesn't change the fact that it shouldn't be, you know, a pro-life issue at conception. And he said that I would support a pro-life amendment, but I wouldn't be the one to fight the cause, you know, to be at the front end of it. And I don't think a lot of people understand that about him, but I've heard him speak on abortion as a doctor, and he's not pro-abortion. And it seems that a lot of people that follow him think that that's what he espouses, you know, and it's
he doesn't fight hard enough for it. Maybe that's why.
He I can tell you what. I was in his Liberty Study Group, and we met there nearly every Wednesday in his office and talked about different matters. And he is he's very much pro-life, but I know he would not be for a federal constitution amendment on that, I don't think.
Yeah, I got what I got from his talk was he said I would support one if somebody brought it up, but I'm not going to be the champion of it, is kind of how I got it. But I mean, you've known him for years, and I, you know, I guess the thing that we're trying to do with our research on third parties is make sure that people are getting the truth out there so they can figure out, you know, those people who are absolutely done with the Republican Party, you know, can make the right decision and they don't get caught up in the election rhetoric, you know, the sales job. Because, you know, when you get, and this is a kind of a spinoff on that, but when you get into the whole thing of legalizing marijuana, there's a whole bunch of things. You know, the first thing, you know, they talk about, oh, well, regulate and tax it. And the first thing that came to my mind was, how do you tax a plant somebody can grow in their own house? You know, you're going to force people to go to stores to buy it, and then you're going to have to create a new law enforcement agency to get all those people to, you know, to go and chase down people who are growing it on their own, because it's very simple to grow a plant. And then people say, well, this is the same problem we had with prohibition. And I get in that argument with people going, no, it isn't. You know what the difference between growing a pot plant in your house and having to have a still is, or carrying around bottles of liquid? It's a lot easier to regulate the illegality of it than it is the issues with the pot. I go, I think that people are a little confused at how much more difficult it is to legalize it. And the thing that I find is that they put all these statistics about the drug war in one batch while they talk about only legalizing pot. Well, there's a lot of other money in the drug war that are after some, you know, some pretty dangerous drugs. So, and that came up in the debate, and I thought I'd give you a chance to kind of, you know, roll with that a little bit.
No, I think your observations are right on target on this thing. You would have to have a huge bureaucracy if you legalize drugs, and then would the federal government be in charge of marijuana sales, or would the individual states be in it? I know when they had prohibition, the federal government wasn't in charge of any whiskey sales. They would leave that up to individual states, and I don't know what kind of system they had set up if they legalized drugs. And I think your point about the administrative hassles and collections hassles are very, you could run into a lot of problems with it.
Yeah, I want to do some more research on this because it is a big topic and it's being talked about a lot, especially with, you know, Rocky and Stein and Johnson talking about it. And I do know people, I know legal people and sheriffs and everything else that, you know, are into this, that want it done, that want to change our legal issues. And I want to interview these people. Go ahead, Robert.
Great. Yeah. Can we only have about 8 minutes left? And I promised, okay. I promised Virgil that, you know, at 11 o'clock we'll go ahead and let him go. So there's a couple, just two more questions
sure.
that we'll have. And since you did me bring up the legal system, I think it's good. Move into this one is how do we get the Constitution back into our court system? And beyond that, how do we get Congress to stop violating the Constitution?
Oh, there's I think you one major factor in selecting any judge would be: are you going to legislate, or are you going to follow the Constitution? If you're going to legislate, you're in the wrong branch of government. You need to be in the legislative branch and not the judiciary. And what the remedy Congress has is impeachment, and they could certainly impeach some of these judges that just set aside the verdict of the people and say, well, no, I'm saying this is unconstitutional. What the action that you took, even though the citizens overwhelmingly wanted it, or they had a referendum on it. I mean, I thought California's in the Ninth Circuit Act there, setting aside the will of the California people in defining marriage, that's not a constitutional right. That's a legislative decision to be made by states or the federal government. It's elected representatives to determine the definition of marriage, not a judge, in my view. And that's an example of judges legislating. And I think we need Supreme Court justices that would recognize that the court is not a legislator.
Can the president influence that? I mean, how does that change?
One way to handle that would be for Congress to really get courageous and say if these judges are just legislating and taking our authority, we're going to impeach them. That would be a huge step.
That was great. I really appreciate that. We're probably need to let you go because we're going to run out of airtime. And once again, I appreciate your time, and we don't want to wear you out. I know what you're doing is just unbelievable. You know, it's
right.
Gotta be unbelievable.
Yeah, but definitely. It is about 4 minutes till 11, and so there's only a few minutes left. So I'd like to personally thank Virgil for coming in tonight, and also like to thank you again for being gracious on Wednesday, yesterday, up there in Ohio. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure getting that opportunity to speak with you. And I'd just like to say, if we don't get the opportunity to talk again before November 6th, which be great if we can, but if we can't, understand, I wish you good luck on the election. And once again, thank you very much for coming in tonight.
Richard, thank you, and I want to thank Chris. I appreciate your questions and observations. I think being with you, we got to go into a lot greater detail, certainly more than in a 30-second television ad. I wish more people could hear a more in-depth analysis that makes for better understanding, and I want to thank both of you for what you're doing.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much.
We will talk again.
Yes, definitely. Definitely interested in doing that. And you have a good night and well travels in the rest of your campaign.
Thank you.
Thank you. And yes, folks, that was Virgil Goode, the presidential candidate for the Constitution Party. And we do only have about 3 minutes left. And we can chat for a little while, but for the people who are not on the phone lines, that opportunity will not be unless you call in, which you may call in at area code 347-945-7428. And also, after this show, check out the Tex and Rex show, which can also be found on Blog Talk Radio. And you can just look them up under the Election 2012 category, and they will have Mr. Condit interviewing him tonight, I believe, who is running against Boehner in Ohio. So I believe that's going to be an interesting conversation. So please go over, and I suggest going over to the Tex and Rex show after here. But for the folks who'd like to stay on here and chat for a while before going over to the Tex and Rex show, okay, Chris, and anyone else, then I would appreciate it. And once again, of course, it was great to have Mr. Goode on. But we only have a minute left, so I'd like to thank everyone for coming tonight.
whether you came on Blog Talk Radio or through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And I asked that go ahead and check it out. Maybe send me a message via the contact page or check out the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which helps save baby elephants from poachers that killed their parents. And if you just do a one time a year, $50 donation, you can help one of these baby elephants. And if you do that, just send me a message, let me know that you did, and I will give you a shout-out here for your good deed here on Blog Talk Radio on Bard's Logic. And thank you for coming in. Hope to see you again. And good night. And that goes for you, too, people on the archives. Good night.
Okay,
and we are in, and we are in recording time, and yes, Mr. Good has gone on, I guess, to get some much deserved rest, and there is someone on the line who I will just seen. I will let in to see if he'd like to chime in as well, and this looks like Gunny or Randy.
Good evening.
Not hearing
everyone.
It. Good evening.
Good evening. Well, I just got the last couple of minutes of conversation there. I was actually had to host a National Constitution Party State Leadership Conference call where we were talking about some of the things that would be dear to Chris's heart, statistics and numbers and filling out spreadsheets and. They're working to get the data out there, but it is a work in progress. And but I am also working on trying to get. One of the questions was, what states have what percentages where if you voted for Virgil Goode, how many percentage would it take to get the Constitution Party and established party status? And so I've actually been working on that this evening, and And so
right.
Thanks a lot for that, brother.
it's
all good. And it's important information, and I want to try to make that as available as readily as possible as I can get it out there.
Yeah, that's all. It is. I know all of us, you know, I know I'm tough on you, but all of us realize that if we were all together right now having these conversations a year ago, what would we have done by now?
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know.
Yeah, I feel like it just, you know, in some ways, not in all, but in some ways, wasted a lot of time, treasure, blood, sweat, and even tears, I must admit, you know, fighting what ended up being a lost cause.
Because
I was a Newt Gingrich supporter and, you know, spent – many an hour for quite some time fighting for him when it was pretty much, it seems like, a setup for Romney to get coronated as the GOP nominee. I mean, they were talking about his quote-unquote inevitability, you know, for months. So, and, you know, before the election probably pretty much even started, so.
Randy.
Did I lose you?
Randy?
Actually, I was on the phone with somebody whose name you all would recognize, Don Schrader, the chairman of the Ohio
Committee.
Yeah, just doing a little bit of follow-up conversations. You know, I was able to give a report about the group, the Young Constitutionalists, that I'm working to get established as an official arm of the Constitution Party. And, you know, we've got what we're trying to do is, you know, with Ron Paul retiring, you know, there's a little bit of a disconnect for the youth about, okay, where are we going now? And so what I'm trying to do is provide an organization where we can capture a lot of the youth that are liberty-minded and give them an area where they can really participate and battle for their future. Because this isn't just about, you know, the one thing about Campaign for Liberty is it's a fantastic organization and it's educational and all, but, you know, they actually have to decide, okay, are we going to endorse a candidate or whatever? Well, with the unconstitutionalists, what we're intending on doing is, you know, training these students to be able to run for office and to hold meetings and to provide leadership and, you know, where they can actually get involved with the civil government and also provide a mechanism for internship. You know, that's kind of one of the things that the Republican and Democrats do. So we want to really take advantage of that. And I'm pretty excited about the direction and the level of enthusiasm that people have for this organization.
Well, tell you what, Randy, if you get the opportunity to talk with Don maybe shortly after we close out on Bard's Logic tonight, he may be interested. He may know already, however, that Condit from Ohio, I believe he's a Constitution Party, at least that's what I was believe I was told, is running against Boehner, and that might be something on the Texas Rec Show that he might want to actually check out, I would think.
Yeah, I don't well,
it may be late, but
yeah, in fact, what's real interesting, you know, in the point is there's a lot of convolution out there. You know, Missouri, you know, they've got some pretty specific guidelines about who you must be to be a candidate. Fortunately, there was a guy that decided he wanted to run as a Constitution Party candidate there in Missouri, and it was a guy that none of the Missouri leadership had ever heard of before. They did a quick little bit of research because the guy actually filed as a Constitution Party candidate. Well, they found out that this guy was anything but constitutional, and fortunately, in Missouri, they had, it's like a 15-day period where they can deny him access to their party name. And, boy, I tell you, the guy was all huffy and puffy, and I forget which direction he went. But, you know, that's not true across the state. And what I was, as I was researching those percentages, the way they, you know, one state says in order to be an established party, basically you got to pull. Not get votes, but poll more than 15% at the state level, and you're an established party. That's, man, there's just some weird stuff all across the spectrum here.
Yeah, it's tough, but if you don't have those numbers, you don't know what you have to work for, and people are driven by goals. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's just amazing. You know, people will gravitate in the direction of an emotion. But if you have a goal and say, we need 1% or 15%, and that equals, you know, this many people, we now know what we have to work towards. It just really defines activity. And you know that. You're a military guy. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I hate that bureaucracy part.
Yeah, but, well, you're putting it all together.
I know the necessity of it, but I hate it. I really do.
Well, no, and that's data management. But once you have that data in your hand, guys like you and me run.
Right.
You know, because because that's how we're driven. We're driven towards that. You know, I know what the numbers are. I know what has to be accomplished in my state. And now when I'm out there talking to people, I'm driven by that knowledge. And that's, you know. So, unfortunately, you know, you don't have people doing that for you. I make this note on my site all the time going, I'm sorry, I haven't got to this yet. My secretary didn't come to work today, you know, because I'm one guy trying to do it all, you know.
She takes a lot of days off, it sounds like, Chris.
Yeah, she sure has. You know, I mean, I have 1,000.
She's part of the union because I'm surprised she's still employed with you.
Yeah, really. But I look in my group file, you know, I have this thing called group file, and in it is dozens and dozens and dozens of half-started projects and little, you know, like if there's a talk we have that's an area I want to expand on and do a show and do research on, you know, I throw it on a Word doc or I throw it in Excel, depending on the nature of the information. And then, I mean, I'm going like, man, I got 100 things I want to follow up on and deliver, you know, to people. And I just, you know, it's very hard to do when you're one guy, you know, with a vision.
Well, think of all the different shows we want to try to do. You know, I was like, this is a good topic for a series of shows. This is another topic for another series of shows. And, you know, there's so many different things to do after.
Sovereignty a while back?
We tried to. We got two or three episodes, and then after that, we, you know, things really started getting up and running with vetting the third parties, and then just kind of coalesced from there. And you know, now we are.
I think we were supposed to do all these interviews. I think we were supposed to do a debate. A discussion last night, and you know how deep and involved to the Constitution we got then too.
Yeah, no. Well, we were going to go over the debate, and I think we made
the point tonight, though. You know that these are venues that you can go deep into the subject and to teach and help people understand these principles. It's one thing to just. Like you said, it's one thing to give a 30-second soundbite on these issues, but it's another to be able to talk about here's the whys and the reasons and the becauses and all that. I mean, you know, let's look at the issue of, you know, pro-life. Is it a federal issue or isn't it? And, you know, why should there be an amendment or not an amendment? And those discussions are important, but when, you know, you're trying to just give a 30-second soundbite, you know, sometimes you sound like a raving loony. And
or even a two-minute one in a debate.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And, I mean, you know, it really does take more time than just a two-second response to say, look, here's why life is a federal issue. Now, is drugs? You know, well, let's go through. Is there anything that relates to that in any way, shape, or form? And no, there is not. But there certainly is an issue about life. There is certainly an issue. Now, some people would say, oh, well, wait a minute. Hold on, Randy. It does talk about liberty. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. It does. So, you know, we've got to really, you know, now we've got to start slicing this candy bar down a little bit to see where it is, and how do we address that from a constitutional perspective?
Right, and you know, and I think that that gives us the foundation for almost all of our conversations. One of the things, you know, we got into a little bit of on the drug conversation because I kind of opened the door on it. I've stayed away from it, you know, the legalizing drugs, because for one, I didn't have time to research it. So with the debate last night. Or last night, holy smokes, okay, 2 days ago, and it coming up again and again and again, I kind of opened it up on my site today. And in the process of it, it forced me to have to go get some more information and to think about my positions and my, not really my positions so much, yeah, partly, but also my questions. Because, and I actually had an opportunity to uncap that and get Virgil to respond a little bit more on it, because and I threw my perception out there and gave him a platform to respond to it, because you know it's the argument, you know, with legalizing marijuana is you know for one, here's the thing that bothered me about what Gary Johnson said is that he takes the whole lump sum of all the costs and all the incarcerations and all the prisons and throws them in a one lump sum to make his argument about legalizing pot. Well, there's a whole lot different drugs involved in all those incarcerations, court, police, and everything else. There's some really nasty drugs out there that are really terrible and are definitely screwing people up, you know, whether it be heroin, meth, or, you know, whatever. So if you're going to take the issue of marijuana and argue statistics, then for me, because I'm analytical, you better pull those numbers out of that bigger picture, because if you're not doing that, if you're playing those big numbers, but your issue is only pot, then I'm starting to think you're a little bit of a salesman. I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying that if you're going to take that argument, you better have your numbers right.
Well, and, you know, you kind of made the same point with the issue of drones, you know, last night. It's a hot button issue, you know, and so we're going to talk about how we stand against drones. Hey, well, wait, hold on a second. Let's talk about the underlying issues behind here. Let's talk about the unconstitutional use of the drones. Let's talk about the unconstitutional use of our military, you know, and do we take a stand against that? So you're absolutely right on that.
And real quick, gentlemen, just to let you know, tonight I'll probably only take the show to 11:30 because I am interested in I want to go to the Tex and Rex show, because I want to hear about the kind of guy since he is in Ohio as well. And they mentioned something that he might be from Cincinnati, but
I don't think he is. I could be wrong, but I looked at the ballot for my county, and I did not see his name on it. I did see some signs for Boehner up north near Troy, Ohio, or Dayton.
How do they spell that? B-O-N-E-H-E-A-D?
What's that? Boehner?
You missed it.
Yeah, but this is a Detect and Rec show. But I'm just joking. Dropped off. I'm trying to think of. That was Mary. I guess she just didn't. Oh no, Mary just dropped off. I didn't hear. I had her mic open. At least I thought I did. Maybe she's just listening. I'll have to apologize to her if I didn't open her mic when she wanted me to, but I did get a message from her saying so. But anyway, I digress. Because I'm going to hear what the guy's going to say. I won't mind talking to him. And I got to do some. Oh, she's messaging me now. Oh, boy. Rex Guest is on now. So if there's any closing things the gentleman want to do, Sunday night, Chris, we'll talk about Sunday night's topic later. We can continue and maybe even go on later if Rex doesn't have any special guests on. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, the only thing I want to add to this is that one thing we did learn tonight, without getting into any deep conversations that pull us off, because I'd like to go over and listen to this gentleman too, is that there is a debate on the 4th of November in Washington, D.C., that Ralph Nader is sponsoring, where all four candidates will be back on the stage. Because I, under no uncertain terms, am going to be extremely vocal about what I think of the fairer and whatever,
equal
balanced, game show, let's divide it down. I'm totally against what they did. It is not what their mission was. And so we got another debate, and we need to get that out.
And I apologize again, Chris, for not telling you about that. That's actually something Virgil
right.
mentioned to me when I was up
no,
there.
No problem. I just want to make sure it gets
him.
Out.
So, yeah, he told me that, and I guess there were so many other things that part kind of slipped my mind there for a little while. Anything you'd like to chime in real quick, Randy, before we head over to the Rex and Tech Show?
No. Let's go, folks. Let's go.
Okay.
Right,
well, I'll be there probably about 10 minutes because I'm going to cook me up some, reheat some chili for dinner, and then I'll be over shortly. So thank you once again for coming on, and we'll see you again.
All right. Well, no tooting on the show.
Well, you know what? I'll put my thing on mic. My mic on mute. So
my phone on mic.
Good
yeah,
later,
whatever.
Taters. We'll be over there in a minute.
All right, taters. We'll see you guys.
Bye,
over
guys.
There.
See you later. And even though it's recording time, I'm still going to end the show the way I do every night, and that is with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. Thank you, and have a good night.